Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Dr. Carrie Donahue is back with us today. She's the owner of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia. We're talking with her about caring for older pets today and certainly taking your pet care questions as well. And I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Carrie Donahue, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you.
Well, we haven't talked for a while, and you've changed. Yeah, it's been a while. You've changed your practice a bit.
I have. You know, I did have a brick-and-mortar clinic location in Madison, Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care, and kind of the COVID triggered all of this from, you know, kind of the change that I made because pets were coming into the clinic, pet owners were not coming into the clinic, and it just became so difficult for me to just kind of keep practicing how I was. So I ended up closing the clinic location and I started to do house calls and really have kind of targeted my practice more toward helping senior animals, kind of getting into hospice, palliative care for pets, and even end-of-life care for pets. I still do, you know, holistic medicine and telemedicine and counseling, so it's a little bit of everything. But really the focus has kind of been for me on senior animals because that's what I really am so passionate about.
Well, I tell you, a friend of mine adopted an older Staffordshire, and Lila is the best dog I have ever. I love that dog.
Really? Oh, that's so good to hear.
I had a chance to, my friend was on vacation. I had had her, Lila, for 9 days, and we had the best possible time. And I know from my point of view, there are a lot of advantages to an older dog, but maybe you should talk about the advantages as you see them.
Yeah, I know. And it's so true. There are so many advantages about having senior animals and even thinking about adopting a senior animal. And there are the benefits there. In general, they tend to have just kind of like a calmer disposition. And they don't require typically extensive training. I mean, a lot of that has already been done. A lot of senior animals that are adopted come from regular homes, and they have been in a home, and for whatever reason, they lose that home, and they're trying to find a new home, you know. And so a lot of times they're already house trained. They all already know basic commands, less energetic. They tend to sleep a little bit more, and they don't require so much extensive monitoring and as much energy put into them as a younger dog would or a younger cat would. So a lot of benefits there in kind of sharing your life with a senior animal.
I know Lila is calm, cool, and collected.
Perfect.
Other dogs are running up to her barking. She's a big dog, and she just looks at them.
and that is another thing, too. If you're thinking about adopting a senior animal, is you really kind of know what their personality is. And you might have even an extended history on the animal before you adopt them. But, you know, the personality is pretty much in place. So if you say calm, cool, collected, that's what you get, you know, and that's what they will be. Instead of a younger animal where, you know, puppy or kitten, you don't know what their personality is going to end up being.
Well, I can tell you I told my friend if ever there's a need for that Lila to go somewhere, send her to me. I'll take her.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
I would love to have Lila full time, but it's also a lot of fun to be with her part time.
Well, right, exactly.
Let's get to the disadvantages before we take some calls here. But, you know, what are the downsides in terms of it from your point of view?
Yeah, well, you know, as a veterinarian, of course, older animals tend to have more health issues. And that's just one of those things that I think it is very important to have a good relationship with a veterinarian if you have a senior pet, and going beyond even taking them in for annual visits, but even twice a year or more frequent than that, just to keep on top of any health issues that might arise, and kind of doing the basics like blood work, making sure that liver and kidney values are normal, red and white blood cells are normal, all of that, any diagnostics that might need to be done on lumps and bumps and those sorts of things that tend to pop up as animals get older. So that's probably the biggest thing, is just kind of like the health care as they age and knowing what might be normal aging changes and what might actually be a medical issue. But that being said, a lot of rescues, a lot of shelters really do a lot of the groundwork to set these senior animals up for success before they go into a new home. You know, going beyond spaying and neutering, they might do dental care, dental cleanings, any extractions. They might remove any masses, lumps, or bumps that an animal might have. Probably have done the blood work so they know if there are any health issues. So that's kind of a nice thing. If somebody is looking to adopt a senior animal, all of that really should be in place before they adopt them so there are no surprises.
Well, we have our lines are all filled with questioners, so maybe we should take a call or two here. Dawn in La Crosse, we'll start with you. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, another great show.
Thank you.
In April, I adopted a puppy mill rescue dog. He's half Pomeranian, half Sheltie, but he's more size of a Sheltie. He's about 30 pounds. They said that he has a heart murmur that's maybe a 2 or 3, the vet said, and I'm just kind of wondering if there's anything with his diet or anything I can do to kind of extend his life as much as possible.
Very good question. Yeah, and having a heart murmur, they're usually graded from 1 to 6. So if you said it's about a 2 or 3, it's a pretty low-level heart murmur. Typically, it's something that your veterinarian will want to keep an eye on and want to listen to whenever your dog comes in. But there are some really great supplements that I recommend for animals who have any sort of heart disease, heart issue, and just kind of supporting the heart muscle. And the first one that I recommend is called L-carnitine. The second one is coenzyme Q10, and the third one is an herbal that's called hawthorn. So L-carnitine, CoQ10, and hawthorn, those are the three big ones that I recommend for any animal that has any heart issue. Very safe to give. There is a supplement, it's by the company VetraScience, that's called Cardio Plus. And that has all of those ingredients in there. It also has taurine added in. It has vitamin E. So it's a really great overall supplement for any animal that has heart disease or any sort of heart issue. The other thing that I do recommend is, you know, just kind of talking about diet, is something that you can do is feed your animal actual heart tissue. So you can go to most pet stores and find dehydrated beef hearts. You can find pork hearts, you can find turkey hearts, chicken hearts, but those are a great thing to just kind of feed your animal as a treat, just in the kind of thoughts that feeding them that organ will have specific nutrients that will help the organ that might need support.
Oh, good points. Dawn, thank you and good luck. Appreciate your call. Katie in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Katie.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm very grateful. I have a senior cat who I just recently got a long overdue rabies booster for. And since he got the booster, he has just been a different cat. He doesn't want to eat. I've ended up giving him fluids and syringe feeding him and acute care cat food. Just to get him over the hump, but I can't seem to get him over the hump.
How long has it been?
He got the shot on Friday, and he quit eating on Sunday, and I've been syringe feeding him since.
Okay. Yeah, and really, it, I guess it hasn't been that much time. I think maybe just giving your cat more time to kind of let his body adapt to getting that vaccine. And any vaccine that's given is going to stimulate the immune system to have a response to produce the antibodies to protect your animal. So he might just be kind of dealing with that. And my thought would be that with a little bit more time and more supportive care, he might start to feel better. There is actually a homeopathic remedy that I have used in the past that, well, you know, in theory, what it is supposed to do and what it's designed to do is help animals to adapt to getting the rabies vaccine itself. And the name of that homeopathic remedy is called Lysin. It's spelled L-Y-S-S-I-N. And it might be worth even reaching out. You can reach out to me or any other homeopathic veterinarian to find out more about giving that homeopathic remedy, because that might be helpful in even just kind of helping to get your cat over the hump and getting him back to normal.
And you're you can be reached at online at fullcirclepethospice.com. Is that right?
Well, probably the best way to get in touch with me is email at info@fullcirclepet.com, which has been my email address all the way through, and that's kind of the same thing. The phone number for me is 608-909-0002, and you can text me at that number, you can call me at that number. So really any way that's the easiest to get in touch with me would be just fine.
What's the number again, 608?
Yeah, 608-909-0002.
608-909-0002?
That is it, yep.
Okay. got it written down now, and hopefully
okay,
everybody
great.
Else did too. And again, the what was the site that you mentioned that people...
The website is fullcirclepet.com. And I also have another website that's kind of more geared towards the hospice and palliative and end-of-life care, and that is fullcirclepethospice.com. So you can go to any of those websites and contact me through those or email at info@fullcirclepet.com.
All right. Katie, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Marty in Douglas County. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. Hey, thanks, Doctor, for being so available to people with the website and the phone number. That's very generous. I really appreciate that. We have an 11-year-old lab mix. He's very lumpy. He's got those old dog lumps all over him, which we're not terribly concerned about. But he does have a lump under his right eyelid. We had a vet look at it. She said, well, he's old. The eye gets goopy, so all we do is just kind of wipe the goo out. I'm wondering if you have any suggestion holistically, any way we might be able to help him with this.
Yeah, those are tough. Those eye, kind of like the eyelid margin masses that can pop up most commonly in older dogs. They're typically benign. At least everyone that I've ever removed and submitted for biopsy has been a benign growth. So I think it's completely fine to just keep an eye on it. But certainly the hardest thing about those is that they can actually kind of apply a little bit of pressure to the cornea of the eye and then cause kind of that watering and some discharge that you might see. There are some nice natural sort of eye treatments that you can use. Probably the number one that I would recommend that's very, very simple is to make up some chamomile tea. And you can just kind of make chamomile tea as you would and heat it up, let it steep for a couple of minutes. And then you've got that tea and you can store it in the refrigerator. And then you can use that as kind of like a compress on the eye, but also using that to wipe away any discharge. And it is very, very soothing for the eye. It's soothing for the tissues around the eye and can help with the discharge. So that's usually what I recommend, a nice natural way, you know, to keep the eye as healthy as possible.
And thank you very much for calling, Marty. Appreciate it very much. talking today about adopting and caring for older pets and taking your pet health questions as well as we visit with Dr. Carrie Donahue, owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison, works out of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, Trina LaSousa, our engineer, and you, my friends, are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest, Dr. Carrie Donahue, with us, owner of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia, talking about zeroing in a little on adopting and caring for older pets, taking other pet health questions as well as we move along today. And you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can email at ideas@wpr.org. Vicki in Mount Horeb will give you a chance. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Our daughter is a foster for one of the local dog rescue groups. And she just got a Pomeranian that is at least twice the weight it should be. The poor little thing can hardly walk. And she is just kind of wondering how quickly do you bring them down? I mean, like, how much do you restrict and yet make sure they're getting the nutrition they need?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. And you really kind of want to do it slowly. And I would say probably a combination of decreasing calories. And if the dog is eating kibble, you can just start by taking out very, very small amounts of the kibble and also increasing exercise. Those are the two big things, decreasing calories and increasing exercise. And both of those together should definitely help with kind of gradual weight loss. And, you know, the other thing that I usually say, if you do take out some of the kibble, you can replace that with fruits and vegetables, high fiber things, even something like canned pumpkin or a little bit of plain yogurt. But those are nice ways to help the animal feel full and, you know, kind of get the fiber without having the high calories. And the kibble tends to be the highest calorie food that you can feed just because it's got a high carbohydrate content. So maybe even adding in a little bit of canned food, taking out some of the kibble, adding in canned food, adding in some fruits and vegetables, and more exercise, more walks, that would probably be the way that I would do it.
Vicki, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Hannah in Verona couldn't stay on the phone, but wanted to know what is the best treatment for a dog with arthritic hips?
With arthritis, and it's such a common thing that we see in older animals, and the good news is there's quite a bit that you can do to help support animals that do have arthritis, whether it is in the hips, or if it's in the knees, or it's in the spine, or wherever it is in the body, maybe multiple places. Usually I recommend starting with a basic glucosamine chondroitin supplement, and adding in something like fish oil is the next thing that I would do. And both of those are really helpful for soothing inflammation and helping to keep the joint fluid flowing and as healthy as possible. Typically, when I do recommend a glucosamine chondroitin supplement, I like the ones that also have added herbals, added anti-inflammatory herbals. The biggest herbals that are really helpful for arthritis would be boswellia, which is also known as frankincense, and also curcumin, which is the extract from turmeric. So you can find glucosamine chondroitin supplements that also have those herbs in them, and that kind of adds an extra punch in dealing with any inflammation in the joints. You know, but then kind of if you do those things and you're really seeing that your pet is still struggling, then moving on to things like medications. And there are aspirin-type medications that you can get from your vet that are really very helpful. And just dealing with, you know, helping your animal deal with the pain, helping with the inflammation, helping them move better.
And let's say we go with the glucosamine chondroitin and with the supplement attached to it. How long typically before you would see results kind of coming? If it was going to happen, how long would that take? A few weeks?
Yeah.
Or?
Right. I usually would say give it at least a month, so maybe sometimes even 2 months before you really say, okay, this is helping or this isn't helping. So, yeah, that's the tough thing with those supplements is it usually takes them a while to get kind of established in the body and to get on board. But, you know, kind of the nice thing about using some of those medications, like the aspirin-type medications, even another one like gabapentin, is if you have to, those are very fast-acting. So if while you're waiting for the supplement to kind of get established, you can always kind of rely on medications just to help your pet be more comfortable.
Good points. Let's take a call. Diane in Madison, we'll turn to you now. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 13-year-old cat who has recently been diagnosed with kidney disease. And my vet suggested or gave me some cat foods to give to him that are better than the food that he's been eating. And he won't eat any of them.
That is a real challenge. And, you know, just cats in general can be really specific about what foods they want to eat. And if you're dealing with a situation like kidney disease, it is very helpful and important if you are able to get them on a prescription kidney diet. There are a variety of them out there, though. I know Hill's makes a kidney-specific diet. Purina does, Royal Canin does, and they've come out with specific formulations that are more palatable to cats. So it might even be worth trying some different brands to see if you can find one that your cat will eat. Worst case scenario, if it's, you know, if nothing is working, I think the best thing that you can do is just get your cat on a really high quality food, because, you know, the lower the amount of kind of byproducts and sort of lower quality ingredients in the food, that just means that the kidneys have to work harder to process the food. So higher quality food, if nothing else is working, and you could also maybe find a food that your cat really likes and see if you could mix in some of the kidney-specific foods as well.
Good luck, Diane. Thank you for calling. Judith in Duluth, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Judith.
Hi, thank you so much. Wonderful program. I have two female Persian cats. They're 12 years old, and they were recently diagnosed with feline herpes. And for them, it affects them in the form of eye ulcers, which, of course, are painful and runny. And is there a homeopathic remedy that could help them through their flare-ups? I understand I'm not going to run them to the vet every time they have a flare-up, but is there something you could suggest that we could do to help them speed through that or at least ease their discomfort through those times? Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know if you have tried lysine, but lysine is typically the supplement that I recommend most often for cats who have herpes, and there are different dosages. I would usually say 500 milligrams of lysine twice a day when your cat is dealing with a flare-up, and 250 milligrams of lysine once a day, just kind of for maintenance in the hopes that you would be preventing flare-ups of herpes. So there is actually a very nice, it's a liquid supplement that I use quite a bit. It's by the company RX Vitamins, and it's called Liquid Immuno. And Liquid Immuno has lysine in it, but it also has some other ingredients. It's got reishi mushroom in it. It's got lutein, which is very specific for eye health. So that might even be a supplement to look into to help your cat, help both of your cats just kind of deal with the herpes diagnosis. When you are dealing with an eye ulcer, there is a natural sort of treatment, and it's called Vetrisin, and it's an ophthalmic sort of a gel that you can use that is just a natural way to help with any redness, to help that eye heal up a little bit faster. Certainly, if you do have a full-on ulcer, I think it's good to go into the vet and have them evaluated and potentially treat it. But the Vetrisin eye ointment might be something good to even just have on hand.
Thank you, Judith, for calling. Appreciate it. Mark in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a 16-year-old Norwegian Elkhound. And he has been plagued with subcutaneous cysts all his life since we've had him. We got him at 4. And I'm wondering, can you recommend anything that helps them? Because sometimes they erupt and I have to go to the vet and get the dog shaved at the spot. But otherwise, they're just, it's like the Apennine Mountains growing over his body.
Hmm. Oh, goodness. That is a tough thing to deal with. And unfortunately, I really don't have any specific therapy that I could tell you that would prevent those from popping up or would make things easier to manage. I think, you know, you're probably doing the best thing, just keeping an eye on them. If you do notice something that pops up, you might even kind of trim the fur around that area. And even using something like Neosporin or a triple antibiotic ointment on it, if it seems like it's starting to turn red, if it seems like it's growing before it, you know, potentially breaks open. But beyond that, there is not a whole lot that I know of that you can do besides what you're already doing.
Mm, there you go, Mark. Thank you. Good luck. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Mary in Fitchburg, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. This is a great opportunity. I have a question about my dog who's about 14 years old, and he just about 5 days ago had a vestibular syndrome event, and he's very slowly getting a little bit better, but I'm concerned because he's still stumbling a whole lot, and he's become very stubborn and is getting up in the middle of the night and wandering around. And I didn't know if vestibular events usually come with neurological changes. And at what point after a vestibular event would you might consider euthanasia? He's just not as happy as he was, and I'm concerned about his well-being.
I'm so sorry that happened. Vestibular disease is, you know, a tough thing to go through, and it's not uncommon in older dogs where, you know, what happens is there can be inflammation kind of in the vestibular region of the brainstem, or it can be because of an inner ear infection, and that can cause a number of different symptoms that you see, kind of instability, difficulty walking, you might see a head tilt, you might see nystagmus, which means that the eyes are kind of going back and forth. Oftentimes, these animals really don't want to eat because they feel nauseous. So really, it's a situation where supportive care is the best thing that you can do. And just kind of, I usually recommend doing kind of like a bland diet just to make sure that they're eating and they're taking in food in the thoughts that these will typically resolve within about a week, you know, and it's, you kind of see this slow recovery and things will start to get better and get better. But in certain cases, especially with really older dogs, things just don't seem to get better. And if your dog is struggling and if it's been, you know, 4 days, 5 days, going on a week and you're just not seeing the improvement, then that really is a quality of life issue. You know, if your dog is not able to do the normal things and you're really kind of helping them to do everything, and if they're not able to sleep and if they're restless, then, you know, I don't think it's the wrong thing to think about kind of end of life care at that point, because it's hard to gauge, you know, how much time to give them before saying, okay, well, we kind of realize things aren't going to get better. And I would say after about a week, you would know if it's not going to get better at that point.
And this is an opportunity, Carrie, for you to talk about. I was on your site looking at the kind of services you provide, and as part of your, you will make a house visit and sort of look at the animal, talk with the owner, and well, you explain what you, what goes on with a house visit in a situation like what, probably like what Mary has.
I know, exactly. It is a perfect example of you know, something that I do and why the house calls are so helpful in these situations. You know, you have an older dog where it might be difficult to get them into the car and go to the vet one time, maybe multiple times. It just gets harder and harder. And that's why I really like doing the house calls, is I can see the animal in their home environment, see how they're doing, and really have time to sit down in the home and talk to the owner about what they're seeing, and have a chance to evaluate the pet, do an exam on the pet. And really, I mean, these consultations and home visits, they're not in and out. And it usually ends up being about an hour where we just talk over everything, you know, what the pet owner has seen and what they might expect to see, what the disease process is that the pet might be experiencing and what might happen in the future, and when might be a good time to think about end-of-life decisions, whether that means euthanasia or whether that means kind of supporting an animal through a natural death. And everybody is so different, and every animal is so different, that I really think it is worth taking the time and just kind of talking over these things with pet owners. So that is what I do on the house calls. I also do offer telemedicine, and, you know, I can do video consults or just over the phone talking over things. But the house calls are so valuable, and just being able to sit down and talk face to face.
And then you may come back, and if euthanasia is what's the best approach, you will perform that and the home as well.
Right. Yeah. And that is, you know, that's a big part of what I do. And I think it's the most important, and it's definitely the most meaningful part of what I do. Kind of, you know, the hospice care, which eventually does lead into end of life and leads into euthanasia. And just kind of establishing that relationship ahead of time is very helpful and important. But yeah, I'm definitely available. Really, I make myself available quite a bit on weekends and in evenings, because you just never know when that time is going to be. When you look at your pet and you say, okay, now is the time. They're giving me the signal that I know it's time for euthanasia. So I do that in home, and I think that's such a gift to be able to give to animals, to be able to be in their homes and surrounded by friends and family, you know, on their bed and just where they're the most comfortable, to have that done. And, you know, typically first I'll give them a sedative injection, so they're with their family and they just feel like they're starting to go to sleep, you know, and they get to a point of sedation, and then giving the next injection, which is just a very peaceful passage for them. So, it's a very tough thing to think about, and it's a tough thing to talk about with your pet, but really knowing that it is such a loving gift that we can give to them at the end of their life to allow them to pass on with dignity and with honor and with love. So, you know, that's kind of why I feel this is such a valuable thing that I do, and something that I'm so passionate about, is because it is so meaningful, and it's such a blessing that we can do that for our animals.
It sounds like a wonderful way to do it. And I'm thinking of at home, the dog or the kitty doesn't have to get into a cage or something and go to a place that they may not have liked very well to begin with.
Right, exactly. I know, you think about all of that stress that is oftentimes involved with getting your pet into the carrier, into the car, drive to the vet clinic, and yeah, it may not be associated with the best memories. But some pets don't mind it at all. And I will say a lot of veterinary clinics do have specific rooms that are set up for end-of-life care and euthanasias, where it's usually a quiet room, softly lit, you know, it's a nice, peaceful space. So that is oftentimes available. But I do think being able to be in your own home is a really nice thing for the pet.
Robin emailed that she tends to adopt older or senior cats, as she says. It's been very rewarding and a benefit to everybody. One valuable tool to have on hand is a scale. She uses a baby scale to keep an eye on the weight, as weight loss can be an early sign of issues, and then you can contact the vet and get on top of them.
Absolutely. That's such a good point to bring up. And it is, you know, it's difficult if you don't have a scale and you're not keeping track of your pet's weight at home and seeing them every day. It is kind of hard to gauge. Are they starting to go down in weight, or even are they starting to go up in weight? So I think that's a great thing to mention, having a scale at home so you can keep on top of your pet's weight, especially as they get older. And like the person said, you know, there are certain health issues that can kind of result in weight loss. For cats, something like hyperthyroidism is a common cause of weight loss. Kidney disease, of course, cancer can cause weight loss as well. But, it, you know, in other cases, a normal aging change is some weight loss. And typically what happens is that animals who are less active, who are not using their muscles as much as they might have when they were younger, the muscles will start to atrophy, and that results in weight loss. So a good reason to keep on top of it, and if you notice it, going into your vet and having some diagnostics done, like blood work, you know, is this something to be concerned about, or is this just an aging change that we might be seeing?
Our guest today, Dr. Carrie Donahue, owner of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at adopting and caring for older pets and taking other pet veterinary questions with our guest, Dr. Carrie Donahue, back with us, owner of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia. Always great to have her come by. Certainly, if you have a question, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org or phone 608-347-9056. I'm sorry. 1-800. I ran another number out of my head here. Let me give you the right one. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Now that I have that right, let's go to the phones. Georgie in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call, Larry. So I have recently adopted a pit bull that is 6.5 years old, and he is miserable, biting and licking his paws all the time. And I checked all four of them, and there's no bleeding or any scratches or anything. We checked everything possible, but couldn't find anything. And he keeps licking and licking, and sometimes we can even hear him groaning with pain or some, you know, terrible itching. So what should I do for that?
And it does sound like probably some sort of allergy, hypersensitivity component in there. Usually that does show up on the paws or you know, whatever the animal might be walking in that's causing the irritation, that's causing them to lick their paws. So I would say, you know, a couple of things that you could try. If you haven't done an antihistamine, that's usually the first thing to try if you are expecting or suspecting allergies. And you could do Benadryl. You could also do Claritin or Zyrtec. There was a study that came out that actually compared the efficacy of Benadryl with Zyrtec for dogs that have allergies. And they found that Zyrtec was more powerful at just kind of like relieving the itchiness. So that might be something to try. The other thing that you could do is even just taking, you know, you can use natural baby wipes. They definitely have body wipes that are made for dogs and cats, and just wiping off the paws, wiping in between the toes, in between the pads, and just whenever your animal comes in from being outside or even just twice a day, wiping the paws off just to get off anything that might be sitting there that might be working its way to the skin and causing irritation.
I'm wondering, just to follow up, Georgie, did your dog have that issue when you got the pet, or has it come about after?
They told me that, you know, he has some itching issues on his paws, but Okay. Then when we got him, he was fine for a month or so. Then he started in licking his paws after a month or so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking it might be something in the house, you know, the new situation.
Exactly. I know. And that is a thing that you kind of think about. Potential allergens, and those could be outside and those could also be inside the house. So, you know, as we're kind of moving into the winter season, you wouldn't expect that there is a lot outside that could be causing the issue. So I think that's a good point. There might be something inside the house. Dust mites, storage mites, those are a common cause of allergies in pets. So it might be, you know, even worth a visit to the veterinarian just to see if they can determine what might be causing the issue. Going beyond the antihistamines, there are some really helpful medications that are available for dogs that have allergies. An injection called Cytopoint or a tablet called Apoquel work wonders for animals who are itchy. So if it gets to that point, knowing that you do have options.
Thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Mary in Greendale, we'll go to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Okay, I have a kitty. Well, actually, she's a cat. She's 3 years old. And she just started developing, like, little bumps all around her neck. And I looked, and one of them was oozing a bit. I put some Neosporin on it. But now she's got, like, a bunch of them, like maybe 30. I don't know what it is. Hmm. And they don't seem to itch. She's not scratching them.
Okay. And you said it's on her neck, or is it on her chin at all?
No, not on her chin. It's on the back of her neck. And now it's
in the back.
Going to the front of her neck. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, gosh, it's tough to say what that could be. You know, it could be some type of even just superficial skin infection that it could be caused by bacteria, that could be caused by yeast, that could even have an underlying cause of allergies that would cause the skin to be inflamed, and then that might happen. So I guess I would say probably going into your vet, and they'll want to do some different diagnostics, maybe getting a skin scraping, and that would check for mites. There are a couple of types of mites that animals can get that might not even really be that itchy. One type of mite called Demodex that lives normally in the hair follicles, and it's really not that itchy, but it can cause some of those symptoms that you're seeing. So that's probably what I would say. I think the Neosporin, using that, is very safe, and hopefully that would prevent anything from, you know, getting infected or getting further infected.
Good luck, Mary. Thank you so much. Diane in Madison emailed that when her 13-year-old dog had vestibular syndrome, he made an amazing recovery as soon as she gave him CBD oil. She continued to give it whenever he got restless with dementia. What do you think about CBD oil?
Very, very interesting and good point to even bring that up. I really like using CBD oil, especially for older animals and for those sorts of neurological issues, whether it is vestibular disease or even getting into cognitive disorder or any other neurological issue, as well as arthritis. You know, the CBD oil is so valuable for relieving inflammation in the body. So I'm glad that, you know, that she brought that up, that that would be something to try. And it's very, very safe to use in dogs as well as in cats. The big thing with CBD oil is you just want to make sure that you are buying it from a source that you trust. And that you know exactly where it's coming from and you know exactly what is in it, that it is pure CBD oil. There was just a report that came out about some CBD oils having higher THC levels than what was reported on the bottle. And THC is the active ingredient in actual marijuana. And that's what, you know, a lot of dogs and cats are very, very sensitive to the THC. So just a little disclaimer on there. But as long as you're getting CBD from a source that you know and trust, I think it can be very, very helpful for a variety of health issues, especially in older animals. So the arthritis, the vestibular, cognitive dysfunction, anxiety, even allergies, because it is so helpful with inflammation.
Do you, are there certain companies, is there a way to tell, you know, couldn't you, if you can trust various companies, or do you have places that you go to for that, for CBD oil?
Yeah, you know, there is one company that I have worked with for probably the last 6-7 years, and I know them, I trust them, where they grow their CBD and the products that they make. And that company is called One Farm. You can go onto their website. It's called onefarm.com, O-N-E-F-A-R-M. And they have CBD oil specifically for pets, and you can get different concentrations. So if you have a small dog, you get a low concentration. A big dog, you get a higher concentration. And the other product that they have, which is very nice, is a CBD transdermal ointment. So this is for animals where getting it in orally, getting them to take it either with their food or directly in the mouth is just not working very well. Cats are really notorious for not liking the taste of CBD oil, and that's where the transdermal is nice. And it's just a cream, and you put it on the inside of the ear flaps where there isn't any fur. You can also put it on the abdomen if there isn't any fur there. And then it just gets absorbed in through the skin and directly into the body. So that's a nice alternative, but that is the company that I work with most often. So I think it is important to even, you know, talk to a veterinarian who might use CBD. I know a lot of vets don't really talk about it very much or don't use CBD products, but kind of finding somebody that does and finding out where they get their CBD from, because that is a big thing. Instead of just, you know, going on the internet and seeing what's out there and reading reviews, and you just don't know what you might get.
Let's take another call. Tara in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Tara.
Hi. So we all know that when a human passes away, they can choose to donate their body to science for either like studying medicine or the outlay of the body, or even become an organ donor after that. I'm wondering if there's anything similar for animals then, if they pass away naturally.
That's a good question. And as far as I know, you know, of course, the UW-Madison would be the place that they use animals for, you know, kind of teaching purposes in those situations, if owners want to make that donation of their pet for learning, for students to just kind of find out about different diseases that might have occurred in animals. So the UW-Madison Vet School does offer that. As far as I know, they offer it at no charge to clients and patients of the UW Vet Hospital. The other option would be you can donate your pet to the UW Vet School if you want to have something called a necropsy done, which is like an autopsy in people where you really want to find out, you know, more information about what might have happened to your pet. But there is a charge that is associated with that to have that done. So a couple of different options there, and it's a really good point to bring up.
Thanks again, Tara. Appreciate it. Norman in Wausau, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Listen, we have a three-year-old German Shepherd, a beautiful dog, no problems other than she wants to whine all the time, and it's not because she's hungry or thirsty. She also likes to lick your face, which I know is a friendly sign, but she does a lot of whining, and I'm not sure why she should be doing that.
Yeah, you know, and it is tough to figure out, you know, what is she wanting? Is it just attention from you, more and more attention from you, or is it something like an actual anxiety issue where they are experiencing anxiety? And, you know, talking about the CBD oil earlier, I use CBD oil all the time for dogs that have anxiety, and it might be something to even think about trying, even a low dose of CBD oil, just to see if that might make a difference. Now, I'm certainly not a behaviorist or a dog trainer, so I can't give you too many more ideas on what it could be, but that would be my thought. If it is an established anxiety issue, you might try a supplement like that just to see if it might make a difference.
Thank you very much, Norman, for calling. Appreciate it. Joel in Hurley emailed that there are rescues that specialize in older special needs pets. One example is Safe Haven Pet Rescue in Green Bay. He adopted 2 7-year-old cats that are both deaf.
Wow. Wonderful. That is just a beautiful thing to hear. And absolutely, there is another rescue that is kind of it, more in the Madison area, and it's called Albert's Dog Lounge. And they do the same thing where they really, you know, focus on senior pets, pets that have special needs, even pets that might be in hospice care, and finding homes for those animals. And it certainly takes a, you know, a special person to reach out to an organization like that and to consider an animal that has special needs. But what a wonderful thing. And I also do want to mention there is a national society and it's called Gray Muzzle, the Gray Muzzle Organization. And you can go to their website, it's called graymuzzle.org. And what they do is they raise money to support rescues that want to specialize in finding homes for senior animals. So you can donate to them, of course you can donate to the rescue itself, but there are ways to really support these rescues and shelters that are trying to find homes for these wonderful senior pets.
Dr. Carrie Donahue, our guest today, she'll be with us right up till 12:30. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we will be back with her. You can call even right now if you want, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Taking a look at adopting and caring for older pets today and some general veterinary advice as well from Dr. Carrie Donahue, owner and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. She's the owner of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia, too. So it's great to have her here. And as you have questions, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Carrie, let's take a call from Vicki in Denmark next. Hi, Vicki. Thank you for calling.
Hi. One of my cats, who's 14 years old approximately, was just diagnosed with squamous cell carcinoma under his tongue. And I know that is a very horrible, incurable type of cancer. I've been given the possibility of doing surgery to remove as much of the tumor as can be, and then after that, radiation to see if more can come out after the surgery. I just feel like that is not maybe in his best interest, because if we do that, it may increase his lifespan a little, but it may not. And he'd have a lot of recovery time from the surgery and then also from the radiation. And I was wondering if there's anything that you could possibly suggest that might make him feel better. Right now he feels great. They found it early. He's not in any pain. He's still eating, but I know that's not going to last.
Boy. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry you got that diagnosis. It's a tough one. It's a tough one to get. Squamous cell carcinoma can be very aggressive in the mouth, which is where we most often see it. And I really agree with you. Thinking about potentially putting your cat through, something like surgery and radiation therapy, it's a big undertaking, and you really do have to take into account, you know, your individual animal and how is your cat going to deal with going through something like that. And like you said, the recovery time. So I don't think that there is anything wrong with doing everything that you can do to keep your cat as comfortable as possible for as long as you can. And when you start to notice, you know, that maybe there is some difficulty with eating and with swallowing, then, you know, maybe thinking about making the decision for your pet. But, you know, in the meantime, I think probably what I would say is thinking about any pain medications. And if he's feeling great now, that's wonderful. But just kind of having an idea in mind of maybe some pain medications. And like I mentioned earlier, that CBD oil, where you can get the transdermal formulation, you can put it on the inside of the ears. Nothing has to go in the mouth. That's a really nice way to get kind of that anti-inflammatory, pain-relieving quality of the CBD, which also has anti-cancer properties. So that might be something that I would say to do. If you're not already doing suck food, that would be the other thing to think about. Maybe, you know, doing just canned food or even some homemade food, like a bland diet, might be helpful. And talking to your vet, too, about even more extensive pain medication, something like gabapentin. And gabapentin works really well for pain in cats. You can get it compounded into a flavored liquid, so it's easy to mix in with the food. But so sorry you're faced with this, but definitely I think keeping your cat as comfortable as you can for as long as you can, and hopefully that's a long time.
Thank you, Vicki, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jan in Mineral Point, on to you now. Hi, Jan.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
A 10-year-old cat who has never had fleas but seems to have picked them up this year. She does go indoor-outdoor. She's a particularly jumpy, I hate to assign neurotic to her, but, I mean, very, very easily startled and cautious. And getting a flea collar on her neck is a real trauma, frankly. We've never done it, but we've had, you know, we've made efforts to minister to her. And save for picking her up like a mama cat would with the, you know, grip on the neck, my basic question is, there is a natural that I picked up at Farm and Fleet with cedarwood and peppermint oil in it, and I know there is also the drop from the vet. And I perceive that to be quite toxic. We have used it on the boy cat here for ticks and worms. It just seems like some really very potent chemical remedies. So,
well, I would approach it kind of from both directions. I tend to be very, hesitant to recommend, you know, like what you mentioned, the topical flea and tick preventative, things like Frontline, Advantix, Revolution is a common one for cats. But really, I also think on the flip side, when you are faced with actual, you know, seeing fleas and a flea infestation, that's the time to use those products. It wouldn't necessarily have to be month after month after month, all lifelong. I would probably treat your cat with something like Frontline Revolution for 3 months in a row, just to make sure that you get on top of the fleas and that nobody else gets fleas and they don't, you know, kind of take over everything. But then you can also use the natural product. And I do like the cedar oil-based sprays and treatments. And those do work very well for, you know, spraying on fleas, and it will kill them. But it doesn't really work that well as kind of like a preventative from more fleas from coming. And they can always jump off and multiply. So that's why I would do kind of a combination where you could do the topical conventional treatment and then use the natural one kind of like for maintenance as well.
Good points. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Donna in Rochester, Minnesota, your turn now. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Yes, I've got a problem with a cat that we adopted about a year ago. She was actually a feral cat, and she probably was about 4 or 5 months old when we got her. And right from the start, we had trouble getting her to eat. And we had to wait quite a while before we got her to the vet because of the pandemic. So when they did finally test her, they said she had mild pancreatitis and never said anything to us as whether that could be a problem or not. But we're worried because she doesn't like canned food. She is very fussy about anything I put in front of her that's a raw food. The only thing she likes is chicken liver. And now I'm worried that she is eating too much chicken liver. on a daily basis. And she'll pick it out of her raw food that I make, or I change the formula of what I make, and she still doesn't accept it totally. So anyway, I don't want her living off of kibble. And so right. I'm just wondering if it's okay for her to have a lot of chicken liver.
Yeah, you know, and I've run into that before where cats just really get addicted to the chicken liver. They just love it. But yeah, I think it's a good point, though, to bring up that you don't want them to be eating too much of the liver. I would say small amounts that you could do on a daily basis, but you don't want that to be the primary source of protein and just calories in general. So maybe there would be a way for you to, you know, just kind of mix in pieces of liver, but continuing to make sure that she's eating the regular food. You know, and a one thing that you could try, actually a couple of things just to get her to eat the regular food. One thing is, it's called Fortiflora, and it's actually a probiotic, which I recommend for any animal in general. But the Fortiflora is a powder that actually you can sprinkle it on the food, and it makes the food actually taste better. It's kind of like a flavor enhancer to the animal. So it's a probiotic, but it also has that benefit as well. You could look into getting some Fortiflora. There is another, it's kind of like a treat supplement, and it's called Churu, C-H-U-R-U. You can get it in these little tubes. You can find it online. I think Chewy.com has it. And it really, it's a natural, it's got nice ingredients in it, but that is a something the cats really love. I think your cat would probably like it as much as the liver, that you could maybe even mix in with the regular food to get her to eat it a little bit better.
Good luck with that, Donna. Thank you so much. And what was the name of it again? It's called?
Oh, the tube, and it's kind of like a pate. It's called Churu, C-H-U-R-U.
All right. Let's take a call from Norda and Eagle River. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. I have a cat that's not quite, well, it's probably over 1.5, but it is an outdoor cat, and we live in the country on sort of a farm, and it disappeared for a week, came back on three legs, and the leg it wasn't using was broken, and broken enough that it couldn't just be splinted but needed to be pinned, which I did. Probably I'm thinking now it has to be caged. For the vet lent us a cage for like 8 weeks, and it's going
right.
It's a very beautiful gentle cat, but he's getting more and more uninterested when I take him out 2 or 3 times a day to have some air and, you know, pet him and love him and water him, but mm-hmm. You know, he's, I should I have put him down, and should I now put him down because he's going to be neurotic by the time he's healed, or can I let him out sooner and just hope it heals? It has a pin that's sticking out and has to be taken out.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think the best thing to do is just, and it can be a difficult recovery period, but planning on the full 8 weeks in, you know, a confined space, in a cage, until the pin can be taken out and they can ensure that it has healed. Because if you let the cat out before then, it's just kind of opening it up for the potential for infection, and then everything can get a lot worse. So I know it's difficult, but as much as you can, trying to keep the cat caged. And, you know, once you get through that recovery period and you get out of this and the cat is better, you know, things will come back to normal.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Andrew in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. I was wondering if you had any recommendations for a good tracking method for cats when they get outside. We recently had our cat escape, and it took 4.5 days before he came back, and we were just miserable the whole time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, you know, and I know there are, you can get GPS collars. That being said, I've only seen them for dogs. I have not seen a GPS collar for cats, but that would be my thought. And maybe just, you know, doing the research and seeing if that's available, because those, in my experience, at least for dogs, have been so helpful for owners being able to track their dogs and be able to, you know, reconnect with them once they get out.
Good idea there, Andrew. Take a look and let me know if you find one. Tiger, my cat, has managed to get, by mistake, get out a couple of times over the years, and it's always such a stressful time. Although when I got him back, each time he didn't seem any the worse for wear. Indoor cat all the time, but apparently enjoyed a few days outside. Oh man.
Right. Oh, boy, that is stressful. That's scary. Did he come back on his own, or did somebody find him?
I had, we were out looking for him, and I had photos up on every of him and, you know, a little poster about missing cat, and somebody, he stopped at a neighbor's a couple blocks away a few days later, and they had seen the signs, and put him in a cage. He went right in, and I went over and got him, and got him back.
Oh, thank goodness!
It was, but it was a stressful time, yeah, for sure. Todd in Eau Claire emailed regarding the cat that stopped eating. One of his previous cats stopped eating. Wasn't related to a vaccine, but his vet informed him that the cats won't eat what they can't smell, and she suggested really stinky food, and it worked.
Yeah, that's so true. And that is something, you know, I guess I've used that more for kind of getting into older cats that might have kidney disease and don't want to eat for that reason. And you can, if you use canned food, you can warm it up a little bit in the microwave, and that just makes it smell better. You know, it kind of makes it stinkier, and that seems to be what they like. So that's a great thing to do. Or even things like tuna, sardines, that you can just get canned fish. Sometimes that's the ticket, too.
Yeah. They also elevated his food dish, so the cat didn't have to drop his head to eat, and also a number of his cats have over the years had issues with rabies vaccines, and his vet suggested injecting an antihistamine at the same time as the vaccine, and that worked.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, just in case that giving that vaccine causes a histamine reaction. And that is something, you know, that is kind of good to keep in mind anytime you take your pet into the vet and they get a vaccine. If you ever notice anything abnormal after you get home, I mean, certainly animals can have anaphylactic reactions where the face can swell up. That usually happens right away after getting a vaccine. But once you get home in the next couple of days, if you just notice things are a little bit off, giving a dose of Benadryl, you know, maybe twice a day for a couple of days just to calm down any histamine activity is very safe to do and always a good thing to just kind of keep in mind.
Jan in Viroqua is up next. Jan, hi.
Hi. I have a friend who's had very good success with a cat tracker. It doesn't actually track them, but it's a small, very small disc that goes on like a pet tag. And then there's a handheld electronic device which will detect that tag within 1,000 feet.
Oh.
So even though you don't know where your cat is gone, you know, you have, you're miles ahead when you go out looking for it.
Right. Good to know. Thanks for that. I mean, all these new things that come out to help animals and pet owners, that's great to know.
Thank you, Jan. We've had a number of people ask for the name of the company that you like for the CBD oil, and I think it was onefarm.com, wasn't it?
That is it, yeah, and just the word one, onefarm.com. And they have CBD for people, but you can go to their pet-specific section and you can find, you know, the concentrations. And they have on the bottles, too, how much is recommended per pound of body weight, and you'll see the transdermal formulation on there as well. So, yeah, great resource and great company.
One of the hardest decisions anyone has to make, and it's come up a few times, is knowing when to end a pet's life. And talk a bit more about how you help pet owners make that decision.
And, you know, it is, it's usually just kind of like a deeper conversation and just kind of listening to what the pet owner has to say and what they have seen with their animals and really what their goals are for their animals. And by and large, most people say, you know, I want my pet to have a good quality of life. And when they don't have a good quality of life, then I know that that's the time for euthanasia and I want to let them go at that point. And so it really kind of comes down to determining what is a good quality of life. And that is, of course, different for each animal and it's different for each owner. And it kind of comes into play too, how much the owner is willing and able to do as far as, you know, treatments and diagnostics and that sort of thing. But there is a very helpful quality of life scale. And you can find quality of life scales in a number of different places. But the website I often go to is called lapoflove.com. And the Lap of Love, they have some great resources on end of life, but they have a quality of life scale where you can actually go through different categories and give your pet a rating from 1 to 10. You know, they have hurt. How much pain is your pet in? Hunger, or how? What is their appetite like? Are they eating well? Hydration, hygiene, are they grooming themselves or is that something you have to do for them? Happiness, are they enjoying their life? Do they want to, you know, eat dinner? Do they want to go out for a walk? Do they want to engage with you? Are they happy when you come home? Mobility issues, that's another category. How well is your pet able to move, getting up from lying down or even lying down itself? Do they have a hard time settling? Are they sleeping through the night? Do you have to help them get up and go out to the bathroom? And the final category is more good days than bad. And for me, I think this is probably the biggest thing that kind of covers all of those bases. And I think it's helpful for people to just kind of keep a calendar of when their pet is having a good day and when they're having a bad day, kind of when you get to that point where you're thinking about end-of-life care. And if your pet is having a tough day, after a tough day and you're not really seeing the good days or the good days are few and far between, I think that's a good reason to think that maybe their quality of life is diminished and that choosing euthanasia for them might be the right decision. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other thing I say is, you know, people feel so much guilt about making that decision to euthanize their pet, but really, from my perspective, I only see that the decision is made because people just love their animals so much and they don't want them to suffer. And that is the only thing that's playing into it. It's just love and compassion and care. And that's the most important thing.
Well, it's been a pleasure, as always, talking with you, Dr. Carey. I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I hope we can get you back sooner than later this next time around. Thanks, Carey.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Dr. Carey Donahue owns and was founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison, providing options for holistic and alternative care. She also offers end-of-life help for those owners' cats and dogs. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.